Our coverage brought to you by Oaklawn Racing, and we're getting closer. And, of course, Hammer just with us. We're getting closer to the winter and the Oaklawn season. And right now we'll get into our third hour. Steve Haskins going to join us, Dave Grenig, and Nick Tamaro over the next 59 minutes. And Steve Haskins joins us now. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You excited?
Yes, you could say that.
I'm
always excited about the Breeders' Cup.
And you know, we talked to Jay earlier and referenced, you know, the longevity of this event, and people forget that when it was introduced, there was no guarantee that it was going to become the, you know, the monolith on the calendar that it's become.
Everybody thought they were nuts.
Yeah, right. People forget that.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy trying to figure out where to run it. John Ayrwood, you know, everybody looks at, you know, John Gaines, it was his concept, but, you know, John Ayrwood is the one that got it going, and he was the one that made them go to Hollywood Park first out and made sure all the movie stars got out there, Liz Taylor and Cary Grant. That was his main thing, and he took over the whole marketing of it. And, when you talk to John, he'll tell you that they had a big committee meeting, all the Breeders' Cup members, and they all decided to, okay, you're going to be in charge of this committee. And John Ayrwood said, I'd like to be on the marketing committee. And they said, okay. And then he gets up from his chair and he says, gentlemen, I just want to let you know right now that I own the Breeders' Cup. Because it's all about marketing. And he's the one that got the, I forgot their names, the two guys that did all the marketing firm that handled all
right.
The early Breeders' Cup.
With Jim Gluckson, that Jim worked
Mike
for.
Leaders,
what? Yes. Yeah, that Jimmy Gluckson. That's how Jimmy got tied
yeah,
on, right?
Right. Yeah, Mike Leedis, and I forgot the other guy's name. But, John's the one that hired them, and he just got the whole thing rolling. And he was also one that, if it wasn't for John, they would never have had it at Aqueduct. But not. it was a one-shot deal. But it was a very good Breeders' Cup. People don't even remember it, but... He said you got to get it in New York right now, after California, and then we'll go right back to California again. But he's the one that dictated all of that. But those early days were fascinating. I think obviously the classic made it, and it made Pat Day, especially when he saluted, he raised his whip and saluted the heavens and everything. And then of course the race that really made it was when he had the two Derby winners, Ferdinand and Ali Sheba, meeting the classic. But it was the whole thing exposed people to California racing and the glamour of the sport and all the movie stars, and that's really what got it going. Those first, I would say, 3 to 4 years, 3 out of the first 4 years was in California, and that's what really got it going. 7 races they only had, so
that's right. Yeah, at the start, and it immediately was. Well received, and everybody. I've heard. I think it's Chuck. I always reference Chuck. Talks about how everybody felt it was like this novelty, and it was going to be a one and done, and let's just we'll enjoy it, and then the next thing, the momentum grew.
It looked like a novelty, and then how does it get started? It gets started with the Juvenile Fillies winner being disqualified.
Well, that and Chuck says that. Chuck says what was crazy about that first one was that it had everything. It had the DQs. It had the Europeans. It had it everything you could have imagined happened.
I know. Remember, people forget Lesh Carey. That was pretty wild. People forget that. I'll never forget the turf that year. The big horse was all along. She had come off a Horse of the Year campaign, had that remarkable run at the end of the year, and she was off for a while. And Angel Cordero, they put on her. And I was saying, what's Bianco doing? Angel Cordero going a mile and a half on the turf? I said, that's not his ball game. And he didn't, I love Angel, but he did not give her a good ride. He made the move way too soon, and then she gets nailed right on the wire by another French horse, Les Carey. Aga Khan horse, but it brought the Europeans into the mix, which was great. It added something for them. It was just great. It was just those early years. I mean, Princess Rooney blew the distaff apart, and then a few years later, you had Lady Secret, the Iron Lady, culminating her career was, you know, an amazing fall campaign to win the distaff. Remember, the early distaffs were 1.25 miles.
That's right. That's right. I thought about that in ages. But yeah, that's good. I forgot about that. What's your, Steve, historically, what was your favorite? Give us a favorite race of all and any, and then one that you just kind of hold, a special feel for.
Well, special feel and a favorite are probably the same thing, but I'm going to give you two. I'm going to break it down. You can pick whichever category you want. But the first one that stands out is Tiznow's. They're both classics, were great, but Tiznow's second classic was so surreal.
Yeah,
coming right off of 9/11, and that whole day was just unbelievable. And then when we had talked about it last time after he was pensioned, but by the time they got to the classic, the Europeans had won four races in a row and three races in a row, and it just looked like the Americans. It was just going to be a horrible ending, and for him to pull that out with Saki, and that was memorable. And you know, you have to remember, I covered these races, so you always look for the best story. But I think my favorite one, with the greatest story, and that I absolutely loved, was Mucho Macho Man. I mean, the parallel stories of him and Kathy Ritvo, both, you know, quote, rising from the dead to be teamed together. We have people who don't know it, Mucho Macho Man is a foal. His mare gave birth out in the field. And he was dead. He was lifeless. He laid there. And Carol Rio, who had bred the horse, who was at a dog show because she was showing dogs, and they called her and her husband up and said, you know, the foal was born dead. It's out in the field. And she came back there, and everybody's standing around this foal, and they're crying and everything like that. And out of nowhere, the foal just jumps to his feet and starts running around the paddock all by himself. And I mean, nobody could believe it. Meanwhile, while this is all going on, Kathy Ritvo is near death from this horrible heart disease that she had, where she couldn't even move. She couldn't get out of bed for 6 months. I mean, she was just so ill that, I mean, they thought they were going to lose her. And miraculously, you know, they performed on her and the surgeries. Oh, it was just unbelievable. And she recovers. And for this horse, who was supposedly born dead, and Kathy Ritvo, who was near death, to team up the way they did to win the Breeders' Cup Classic by the slimmest of noses, and it just got to me, because I watched the race with Kathy by the rail. I watched her, and nobody knew who won, and it was really wild because Gary Stevens, he wasn't quite sure. And he started to wave his whip, and he really didn't know who had won. And then they came back, and I watched Kathy run to the horse when he came back, and they put his number up. But before they put his number up, they showed the replay, and we didn't know. And we're watching the replay together, and she's rooting the horse on. She goes, "Come on, boy, come on, boy." I said, "Kathy, the race is over. You don't have to root the horse. The race is over already." I mean, we were just watching the replay. But she's watching it. This was live, rooting the horse on. Then when they put the horse's number up, and when I watched her go running, sprinting to the horse, and I think of what she went through, where she couldn't even get out of bed, never mind walk, and here she's running full speed to the horse. It just got to me. I mean, it was a story that I don't even remember writing it. I sat down at the computer, and then like a few minutes later, the story was done. I was like, everything fell into place. So, I mean, that was and one of my great moments, by the way, is that I had come up with a statistic that year that Mucho Macho Man.
Right, right. I forgot
Mucho
about
Macho
this.
Mucho Macho Man was 0-14 when he didn't have the lead at the eighth pole, and he was 8-8 when he did have the lead at the eighth
right.
pole.
Right, right.
Gary Stevens had read that, and after the post-race conference, he looks at me, and he smiles, and he goes, "Thank you." And I smile back at him. He says, "I just wanted to tell you, by the way, when I got to the quarter pole, I was thinking of you. I said, I've got to get this horse through the eighth pole, no matter what." And he just bent him and make sure he got the lead at the eighth pole. And he hung on. He kept the record going. So that really made me feel good that Gary Stevens said he was thinking of me at the quarter pole. But that everything fell into place. I just absolutely loved that race, and just a great, great story. And I didn't even mention the story of how the Reeves got it. I won't even go into that, but that's a great story in itself, too.
You've discussed it, and Dean and Patty have talked about it, about how, you know, Dean was looking at the other horse and in that two-year-old race and was more impressed.
That's the horse they were supposed to buy.
Right.
Yeah.
Starts with a G.
You know what? I like the second horse better.
Yeah, it's a famous. There's so many like that. The story. It's not Breeders' Cup related per se, but how Summer Bird, how the Jarrimans, how they ended up with Summer Bird because the mare, the mare ended up having surgery on the wrong knee, and so then they were like, all right, just retire.
Yeah, that was a crazy story. And they were the nicest people. I loved the Jarmans. They were so great. They were like this cute little Indian couple. And I think they were both doctors, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, doctor and doctor.
Very prominent doctors. But they were like the cutest, the most likable people. I mean, I just loved them, and that was... That was a fun year.
It happens in all different ways.
He picked a year to run when it was run on synthetic.
Yeah,
he couldn't he couldn't handle it, and he ran. That was that crazy year with Raven's Pass, and Europeans ran 1-2. European Milers run 1-2. Henry the Navigator.
That's right.
Who had a rivalry in England. They come here to continue the rivalry, but it was on the synthetic, and the Americans just couldn't handle it, and they ran 1-2. So that was like a really weird, very strange Breeders' Cup Classic.
And Bird actually ran well in that race, but
he made a big move.
Yeah,
everybody was making a big move that year. You remember? I mean, Zenyatta made a big move in her race. Everybody was making a big move. Everybody who won that race was making a big move. That's when they decided to run Zenyatta in the filly race. But and then Curlin made the same big move, and it's like, all right, he's got it made. He just couldn't keep it up.
Steve, we got about 15 minutes, a little less, about 10, 12 minutes. Let's dive in and
go over the races then.
Yeah, start with the classic because I don't want to rush. I don't want to rush on the feature.
Well, you know, the main thing with the classic is that everybody's talking. Obviously, it's a phenomenal race, but the one thing that's interesting, by the way, is that 3-year-olds have won 5 of the last 19 classics, and if you want to even eliminate Raven's Pass in that crazy year. But when you look at the four of the last 5 3-year-olds to win the race, were American Pharoah, Arrogate, Curlin, and Tisnow. So I'll tell you one thing: that if a 3-year-old is going to win this race, they better be an exceptional horse, because it's not easy for a 3-year-old to beat really good older horses. And you've got several really good older horses in here. And you know, last week's show, I went into this whole big thing about why I love Tom's Detat, and I still do. I have seen no reason to go against him. I like what I see in the morning, and I'm going to obviously play him on top. I think he'll be a fairly decent price. I don't like going, listen, you don't need me to tell you that, I like Monomoy Girl or any of these big favorites or so. I try to look for price horses or overlays, and I think he might turn out to be an overlay. I went through all the races. And listen, he beat Improbable early in the year, coming off a 4.5-month layoff. So coming off a 3-month layoff does not bother me in the slightest. He's a 7-year-old. He's actually just getting good right now. So I like him. Looking at the horses in training in the morning, Tis the Law looks phenomenal. His gallop he had, his first gallop after his 59-1 work was unbelievable. I mean, he just tore around there. He's so much energy. Coat looks great. I think the little bit of a layoff is going to help him. And Buckley Tag and by the way, this whole thing with the two post. If you don't like the two post, go watch the Champagne and the Holy Bull when he's stuck down on the rail the whole way and doesn't mind it at all. And he has to check in both races and he manages to get himself to the outside. Good horses manage to find a way out, and I don't see any problem with it. I think he'll save ground early, look for a seam, and try and get out. So the two-hole doesn't bother me that much. I just think he looks really good, and I think he's sitting on a big race. And a lot of people have forgotten about Maximum Security. You can either throw out the last race or you can hold it against him. I'm going to throw it out. He loves 1.25 miles, you know that. So I think he might get a good stalking trip right behind Authentic. Depends on how both those horses break. But Authentic is, they both have speed. Maximum Security has more speed, but he's rateable. He can sit off of Authentic. I don't think Authentic can be quite as effective if he's sitting off Maximum Security. So knowing Baffert, he knows that. I think he's going to tell these jocks what to do. Basically, he's going to tell them to get out there. And Global Campaign's going to show speed on the inside too, but they're going to probably outrun him going into that turn if they break well. But that's the way I see it. I see Maximum Security just sitting right behind him. And listen, I wrote a whole column on Facebook. The horse, I mean, everybody hates this horse, by the way. But I tell you, I'm not throwing Tacitus out, to pick up a piece of this. I was praying that Bill Mott would take the blinkers off of him because I think he needs a wake-up call. Desperately needs to, because this horse, he's had blinkers off, on. After his last two races, you got to get him off the lead. He doesn't want to be anywhere near there, and blinkers are putting him there. I still don't mind him with the blinkers on, only because I mean, he's not fast enough. Even if he wants to go to the lead, he's not fast enough to outrun these horses. So I think he's going to be a mid-pack. He's got a good closing punch, and I just like the horse. I mean, I think he can pick up a piece of it. And I think I mentioned last week too, by the way, I just love the way Higher Power is looking, getting out of California. A lot of horses not liking that track out there. It's kind of deep. And coming back here and have five exceptional workouts over the track. You can't just ignore it, the way that horse loves the track, and he just looks good out there. These are horses, if you want to back end on the exotics and, putting them in any of your exotics. But those are two long shots in the race. But Tom Zatar would still be my horse on top. And I told you last week about Improbable. As good as he looks, if you want to go against him, his last two races were perfect setup races. And he took advantage of it. And if he wins, he'll be the best horse and he'll be horse of the year. There's no problem with it at all. But he did come home, when he made his move last time, he was off a slow, slow, slow quarter. Came home really slow last 3/8. And then the other, in the Whitney, he took advantage of a 49, 113 and change pace. He was right up there, came home fast. So, whatever the pace dictates, he'll be there. But they were great setup races. And if you're looking to beat the favorite, then, that's a couple of reasons why.
Outstanding, Steve. Let's back up a little bit to hit a couple of the highlights. The race you're looking forward to, things like the Distaff. You love the Europeans. You track them as well. The Mile is crazy competitive. Give us a few more. Yeah, just hit a couple more. We got about six more minutes.
Okay. Well, let me give you a really wild stat in the juvenile coming up. Do you realize, if you want to talk about precocious two-year-olds, by the way, do you realize that if you look at Thoroughgraph figures, Jackie's Warrior ran a faster number in winning the Hopeful as a two-year-old than Authentic ran winning the Kentucky Derby and Tis the Law ran winning the Travers? This is a two-year-old in the Hopeful. That's how much faster this horse is than anybody else in the race. But I'm going to, if you're looking to beat him too, by the way, I'm going to look at the horse he beat, Reinvestment Risk. I think he's coming up to a big race. He's just got to stop chasing his horse. That's been his problem. He's been chasing him. Here he's not going to be. He's not going to have to chase him. There's going to be other speed in the race. He'll sit back. He'll make a run. He put a scare in him last time in his Champagne, and he just got tired. That's not the way he wants to run. So I think he's going to love two turns. So I think he's going to be an overlay in the race.
He's my pick today for just that reason.
Really?
That,
okay,
yeah, that the dynamic, there's a shift in the dynamics, and it benefits him. He doesn't have to do all the dirty work and can come with one run. And on this track, of course, the short stretch benefits Jackie's Warrior a little bit, too. He doesn't have to leg it out if he is under pressure early and often. A couple others, Steve?
By the way, let me just quickly run over the juvenile fillies, by the way. Everybody's talking about all these four, the four undefeated horses. Again, looking at Thoroughgraph, it's really bizarre. If you watch Princess Nora's races, she wins in hand. She looks very, very impressive. Do you realize in this whole field, she's the second slowest horse in the race? If you look at the other fillies, they're running threes and fives, on Thoroughgraph. She ran a 10. In the last race, a 10. I mean, that's just like, I mean, how slow can you get? But yet you look at her visually. So you decide. You can either decide to ignore the Thoroughgraph number and go by what your eyes tell you, or you can toss her if you go by Thoroughgraph. But I was shocked when I saw. I know she ran a slow buyer, but a 10 was crazy. I'll give you a few more interesting ones. Looking at the turf races in the mile, I mean it's really wide open race. You can pick anybody, but I tell you, Aiden O'Brien's got a 30-1 shot in there named Lope E. Fernandez.
He's not going to be Steve. He's not going to be 30-1. Not after everybody yesterday piled on him. Nick Luck.
Oh no!
And,
really?
Oh my God! Nick Luck and Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad, and
God.
It was crazy.
I thought I was being a lunatic here.
He's been
sprinting, and a bit, you know, he finished seventh in his last two starts, but they were both run on soft ground. In his previous two starts on firm ground, he was a close second to Pinatubo, who would be a big favorite in this race. He was at 40-1 to Prix Jean Prat, and he's beaten only three quarters of a length. And like I said, Pinatubo was the one-time super horse out there. And then he was beaten three quarters of a length before that in the Group 1 Prix Maurice de Guise. And he gets Frankie Dettori now. He stretches back out to a mile. You know, and the only time he's run at a mile was in the Irish 2000 Guineas, and he made a big early move in that race and got caught late. Finished third behind Siskin, who I also like in this race. So, I mean, I find that extremely interesting. Philly and Matt Turf, I tell you, I like another long shot, and another European long shot. And Terra Bellum, I really like her a lot. She's a very classy filly. John Gosden and Godolphin, she's raced once on firm ground, only once, and she won it. It was a Group 2 Dahlia Stakes. Wound up getting beat ahead by Circus Maximus, who's one of the choices in here, in the Queen Anne Stakes at Royal Ascot. You know, you throw out her fifth in the last race, the Group 1 Sun Chariot Stakes, was run over very heavy ground. She gets Dettori back. He didn't ride her last time. And you got Dettori and Gosden at 20-1. I'll take that. Looking at the Distaff, you know, obviously Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver and everything like that. I think it's a horse that nobody has mentioned. I've not seen her name mentioned anywhere. But if you want to put her behind these or anything like that, don't forget about Cece on the rail. I mean, this filly was the top older filly in the country early in the year. She was blowing everybody away. They sent her back to California, and the tracks have been out there really slow and deep. And John Sadler said she just didn't handle those tracks out there. It was just too slow for her. So he sends it back to Churchill Downs to run at 7 furlongs in that Distaff, and she runs fourth. They go 121 flat. Now she's coming, you know, she's away from California. She's going to be back on a track that she should like. She's coming off a very fast 7 furlong race, stretching back out again. And she's going to be a huge price in here, and obviously nobody's mentioning her. So, I mean, she's one that I'm looking for. In getting back to the juvenile fillies, I told you about the four horses that are all undefeated. But I tell you, the filly that ran second in the Frisette, Vequist, she got good numbers. I think she's going to love stretching out to two turns. And she's got Joel Rosario, and I think she's going to be an overlay because they're going to be focusing on the four undefeated fillies.
Agreed.
I kind of like her, and I think in a dirt mile. First of all, what the heck has happened to Nick's Go? I mean, this horse, you know, after his Breeders' Cup Juvenile, I mean, he just went into the tank. I mean, he was terrible until Brad Cox got him. He's run two of these incredible races. You realize with Vekoma out of the race, he has the fastest Thoroughgraph number of any horse in the entire Breeders' Cup. So, I mean, I don't know what the heck. He's turned into some kind of a monster. But I'll tell you who I'm very interested in the dirt mile is War of Will. Coming off the grass, he's got the class. I just like the fact that he's come. I like the fact that he's coming off the grass. Older horse. I think he looks really good. I'll be rooting, of course. You know, my Derby horse. Art Collector, who I liked a lot. Now I'll be pulling for him. But I think War of Will could be a really big overlay. And what are we missing here? Oh, the turf. Very very wide open race. But I'll tell you one thing. Are you there?
Yep, got to wrap up.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just give you this. A 31 shot. I love her in the mornings, by the way. The German filly, Donja.
Yeah, I liked her, too. She caught my eye.
Yeah, she looks great in the morning. And, I know she's been running against lesser company, but, she beat the boys in the Prix Europa, which is the biggest race in Germany. I think she's a top filly. And the other filly I like other races, who caught my eye in the morning, is this Nizuna, who I
Roger
really
Varian.
Like a lot. So yep. I think that about covers it.
I love it, Steve. And it's funny because Danja and Valiance the other morning both kind of surprised me, and I made notations. And I picked Vequist today in the juvenile filly.
Oh, did you really? Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Good. Danja looks like she's an old pro. She galloped around there. I said, "Whoa!" And yeah. I'm a big fan of German horses. I love the way they train them out there. They train them hard, and they're usually good horses, and they're tough. Those German horses are tough, and I move it up at a 30-1. I'll take a shot on her.
That's you, Steve Askin, everybody. And Steve, we'll look forward to a big recap next week. Good luck as you,
you
punch away on Breeders' Cup weekend. We'll stay right here. And speaking of the juvenile fillies, Dave Grenig of the Daily Racing Form, and it's been Dave's category, and we've talked a couple of times leading into it. It had the smallest field of the weekend, but it is a series of top-quality fillies. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. That wasn't my race, but we can certainly talk about it.
Wait a
I had the juvenile dirt for like 25 years, Steve.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. I'm sorry.
But we can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
give us a quick survey. Who do you like in that filly race? Because the New York horses, actually in both the juvenile races today, because the New York contingent, I think, are super prominent.
They are, but I don't know what contingent we think Simply Ravishing is, but I think if Saez uses the filly speed to his advantage and the rail post to his advantage on this filly, I think she's going to be awful tough. I'm not sure why she's not. I hear a lot about Stay Out of the Office, and I hear a lot about Princess Noor, and I hear a lot about Vequist, and all very, deserving comments because they're all very good. But what has this filly done wrong? I mean, she's gone on turf. She's gone sprinting. She's gone long on the track that they're going to run the race on. I think she's going to take a lot of beating, and she has the added bonus of being a New York bred, and we all know that they start with an advantage. I like Simply Ravishing. I think it's, even though it's a small field, I think it's a quality field, but I'm landing on Simply Ravishing, and I think this is going to be a big, big weekend from one Louis Saez.
We reached for Kieran McLaughlin last week or week before, and I lose track. And we went through his mounts, and it became very apparent. In fact, you wrote a piece about potentially Saez, having a smashing weekend.
Yes, I think people would probably be surprised to learn that he hasn't won a Breeders' Cup race, in which up to this point, it's not so much surprising that he hasn't won a Breeders' Cup race, as he's been just a non-factor in these races. I wrote this story so long ago, six or eight mounts maybe over the last 4 years. He's been basically just get him his popcorn, let him watch the event. He hasn't participated much. He came very close in 2013 to winning the Classic on Will Take Charge, very painful for him and for me, as I recall. And just been a non-factor, but this year he's a huge factor because not only is he on a lot of live mounts, he's going to be involved in these paces earlier too. So I'm very curious, as you go to the gate to the first race at Keelan, I'm going to be very keen to see how this track plays. Because if it turns out to be speed favoring, it's going to turn out to be Louis Saez favoring.
Well put. And before we move from the juvenile fillies, I wrote this down when I was doing early work. The collective record in the juvenile fillies, 26 starts, 19 wins, 6 seconds, and 1 fourth.
Yeah, I mean, it's short but select, as the cliche goes. It's a very, it's small, but it's a really good field.
Small but mighty. Let's get your thoughts on your feature race. And I'm just looking down at the Breeders' Cup selection grid from DRF, and you're casting your lot with the Kentucky crowd.
I thought Essential Quality's two races were extremely good. His maiden win, he looked like he was in a bit of trouble, and and he got out of it. And when he got clear, he really kicked on. And then I thought his Breeders' Futurity was even better. I think he's only going to get better. I think this is a serious horse for, you know, knock wood here, if he can stay sound. I think this is a serious contender for next year's Classics, because the mile and 16th, I think he just might be getting started. I think this is a special talent. I could be wrong, and maybe, or I could be right but wrong today, because maybe Jackie's Warrior is just that much better. But you are asking him to do things that, to do something that he hasn't done before. And I know people are like, oh, it can't be that big a deal, it can't be that big a deal. Well, Kuvi, many years ago, was a very talented horse that ran around one turn and didn't get it done. De Hare, the last horse to win the Saratoga Special, Hopeful and Champagne, 3-5 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile back in 93, went to Del Mar, two turns, didn't get it done. So it's not a foregone conclusion in my book that he is going to be better or get it done around two turns, especially in a field that I think has quality, and you know, especially essential quality, no pun intended.
No, I like it. They're often the opener in this Nyquist Stake, and the weekend has begun. Let's turn to Saturday, Dave, and we'll start with your race.
You missed
as
the Aqueduct
well.
Opener. The Aqueduct opener beat the Keeneland opener.
Well, and I see that
David Donk got off the Schneid. He was
how funny is that?
Over 64 at Belmont, and he gets first and third in the opener at Aqueduct.
It was bizarre because he had this really good summer at Saratoga and then got ice cold and then proceeds to win the first at the Big A.
Well, I mean, the thing is, as brutal as the meet as he had from a win standpoint, I think he did have 19 seconds and thirds.
Well, and highly motivated is going to win this opener for Chad Brown and Javier Castellano, and was certainly well-regarded and kind of an expectation horse in this opener. I didn't see what the final odds were, but highly motivated certainly made a lot of sense.
Came off the pace, just noteworthy there.
No, very much. And then the two pace setters, which I think was quick tempo, and maybe was that the two? Was it the two and the six?
Right. I'm just watching. I think it was the two and the six. Watching the same feed as you, so I'm watching a gallop out of the winner. By the way, over under on Into Mischief winners this weekend. I 12. There's the first one. You might have 12.
Let's and Chad Brown winning this opener also. It was 1-6-2. Your order of finish in the Nyquist. Chad's a perfect segue to your other race, the Filly and Mare Turf, and you wrote about kind of a swan song, and this is some troika that he sends out here in the Filly and Mare Turf. I assume what's going to be a Hall of Famer in Rushing Fall, and then there's the matter of the sisters. Some thoughts about how this plays out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he's done this before, Chad has, with a horse that, Rushing Fall, as far as it relates to distance-wise, she's a little bit of a tweener. She probably could be good at anything. We'll find out today or tomorrow if she can get a mile and 3/16. It shouldn't be that difficult, as well as she's run done everything else in her career. But I do think that there's some, I think this is a pretty quality field. And the horse that she beat last time, Me Mary, I think it's a really legitimate horse, and probably would like her even better if she was a mile and a quarter. But look, let's just go back to Rushing Fall has had a brilliant career. She's 5 for 6 at Keeneland. She's grade one winner at 2, 3, 4, and 5. I think Lady Eli did it. I think Beholder did it. Your listeners can tell me who else did it, if anybody, because it's from the female side. I don't know who else has done that in modern times. Never runs a bad race. One bad race on her docket, which was last year at Keeneland, but she was sick. She had missed the race prior to that, and I guess Chad maybe underestimated where she was at that time. But her races this year have been good. She's just a really, as you mentioned, she's a Hall of Famer. Win or lose today, I think she's a Hall of Famer. Today, tomorrow, to cement it, obviously, if she wins. The only thing missing from her resume is an Eclipse Award, which she would obviously get if she won tomorrow. Sister Charlie, I think you could make a case she's a Hall of Famer, too. I mean, I don't know how many horses you could say have won seven grade ones. Now, she hasn't been solid. She hasn't been the brilliance that we've seen her this year. Her campaign got started late. Chad opted to skip the Flower Bowl, which he did 2 years ago with her, but that was more on,
I think that was not intentional. I think she had, going to the Flower Bowl, might have had a temperature or a small bruise or something like that. So I think that this was more by design to say, look, I'm going to train her up. I'm going to make her, you know, get her big, her best shot and see what happens. As Chad said, and I can't remember if I used this quote or not, but, you know, he gets to practice. You know, those two have been practicing against each other for the last 5-6 weeks. I think it brings out the best in them. It's sort of like the Kentucky Wildcats. You know, you're practicing against, when they were really, really good, you're practicing against, you know, future NBA players. It's just going to make you better. I think Rushing Falls is stronger in those works. I'm not sure that Sister Charlie is going to do what Uni did, which is, you know, come up with that great performance like Uni did in the First Lady. But, I, you know, Rushing Falls is going to be very tough to beat, but I think she can be beaten. And in fact, I did pick against her because I'm a big Mean Mary fan. And I think Mean Mary is going to come into this race and give her everything she need, Rushing Falls can handle.
I'm going to dance around. We got about, we can take about another 4 or 5 minutes. Nick Tamaro is then going to close out the week here with me. And, Dave, let's get your classic opinion.
I guess the way I looked at this is Tom Ziatat, you know, Stahl is very good at selecting a target, pointing to it, and hitting it. And I think this is, you know, he came up with this plan shortly after the Whitney, which was a disaster in terms of, you know, him breaking and the way he broke and the race just didn't go well for him at all. I think if their scheduling was different, he might have run again. But now, you know, he sort of gave the horse a freshening. Then he's come back with a series of solid works. And I think if he's going to fire his best shot, I think his best shot puts him in the mix. And from a price standpoint, I think that gives him, that makes him my selection. I think he's a really, you know, his best race can be competitive and win this race. And I think he's going to fire his best. And I just hope I'm right. I'm a big Max and Security fan. Been one for a long time. I'd love to see him run a big race for Louis. I know Louis loves that horse more than any. If Louis could only win one, and I think he'll win more, I think he'd want to win the Classic, not just because it's $6 million, because it's that horse. Improbable. You know, I'm always a little leery of Improbable, just because, are we really sure that he's done with his gate antics? I don't know. It looks, you know, he's been brilliant, but when he's broken, well, but who knows what happens there. I'm against the three-year-old, although I think I did put Tiz the Law fourth, because I think if he could run his Travers race back, it does put him, you know, it's a winnable performance. I don't know if he can. I think three-year-olds are just a slice below the older horses. But I think if I took a head-to-head wager, I think I would take Tiz the Law over Authentic, because I think the Authentic, they want him on the lead, and I think there's going to be numerous horses that are going to take shots at him throughout the race.
You went Monomoy Girl over Swiss Skydiver, but notable that you folded Valiance into the mix.
You know, this is a horse that's getting better, and she's training very well. I think Todd, I heard him say yesterday in an interview, and he said it to me too, when the Eatontown came off, it was a perfect opportunity to try her on the dirt because she had been training well. She ran very well that race. Then she stepped up into a grade one, which I know the Spinster wasn't a great field this year, especially when my Midnight Zoo came out. But I just think it's a horse that's getting better, and she's going to fire. I think she's going to fire her best shot, but I don't think it's good enough to beat Monomoy Girl and or Swiss Skydiver. But I think it's good enough to get in the number, and maybe you squeeze her in between those two and try and get one of the other ones out of the number and hit an exacta. I don't know. It's a great betting race, but I really wavered between Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver. I think I actually picked, when I wrote out my picks, I picked Swiss Skydiver. When I put them on computer, I wrote Monomoy Girl. That's how close it was. I looked at my sheet. I said, wow, I picked Swiss Skydiver. And then I looked at the paper. No, I picked Monomoy Girl. That's how close it is.
Let me just case call him on the landline. He said, not the cell. All right, for Nick. I want to stay on the main track with you, and you and Mike Welch, we discussed yesterday. You landed with Diamond Oops.
Yeah, you know, I just think the trip. If you sift through this horse's past performances, Steve, his best races are three quarters. I know that. His best races are three quarters on dirt. I know that Patrick has done a little bit of everything with this horse, turf, dirt, a little bit long, a little bit short. But he finished ahead of Mattioli last year behind Imperial Hint, who ran maybe the second best race of his career in that Vanderbilt last year. Maybe it was the best. I'm not sure. But it was a good performance there. He's won. His last three-quarter race was very good on the dirt. And I just think that he's I think he's going to fall into a nice trip. And I'm a, you know, Vekoma, I was against whether he was in the race or not. But now with him out, you know, I like his workouts look to be good. On the dirt at Palmetto, then he went back to the turf the other day. And, you know, I just think another guy who can point for a target and hit it is Patrick Biancone. And I think this horse is going to fall into a really nice trip. I also think Friends Fire is going to run a nice race, too, for Kelly Green. I'm kind of rooting for that horse to run well, too, for Kelly. I know everyone looks at him as a Belmont Park horse, but I think he's won at seven tracks overall, maybe six.
Yeah.
And even he even won at Parks when another horse tried to bite him. So I'm glad he's going to get a fast track to show his best, to show what he can do. And I think he'll run. I hope he runs well, because his previous Breeders' Cup efforts have just been so-so for the other guy.
You know, like Serengeti, but you got Sally's Curlin closing for a slice too in the Philly Mare Sprint.
Yeah, I mean, look, the way I look at it is they're going to go fast, 43 and change perhaps, and two of them are going to be chasing, and maybe they don't, you know, maybe they get tired and they're chasing, and one's going to be sitting back there, and she's going to, I hate to use the word suck up second, but I just think she's going to, you know, be able to go by them. And again, it's a kind of a chalky on top, with, you know, maybe a price underneath to spice up things after.
Dave Grenig, everybody, DRF Grenig, and the action, of course, as we mentioned, getting started in New York, and there's the Turn Back the Alarm, and what's the stake on Sunday?
Sunday's in Nashville with a horse
Nashville.
In Florida for Kathy Riffle Ice Lake, interesting in there. And then you have the attempted today, another field that's not big, but it's got a couple decent horses in it, Cafe Society and Molotov for Todd, who could be 5,000 for Todd. I've actually got a timeline for Todd starting at 12:40. He has at least one starter an hour until 5:15, sort of on 5,000 watch here.
Nice. I'm glad you reminded everybody of that. So the next tally by TAP is going to be number 5K. Dave, enjoy it. Good luck. And we'll catch up next week.
Sounds good, Steve.
Dave Grenig, everybody, and the Daily Racing Forum, and I'll as Nick Tamaro joins us, I'll put the bow on all the coverage. The only person we didn't get back to was Steve Anderson, and otherwise the DRF team every year walks us through their races and delivers, you know, second to none information and analysis for everybody. And Nick Tamaro joins us, and we'll close out the week at Keeneland for Breeders' Cup with Nick, and we gave the Friday analysis yesterday. We're going to focus on Saturday. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And got to mention that going into this, is there any late adjustments to your Friday thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I think everything I had laid out, I'm still pretty much on board with. Going to kind of focus a lot of my action on the latter part of the card on Golden Pal and Plum Ali and price horses like New Mandate sitting on go. So, yeah, going to roll with those.
Excellent. Let's dive into Saturday. We've got exactly 15 minutes and should be just the right amount of time. I'll mention as they move toward the second race here, 21 minutes. Louis Lazanero has that horse that we told you about ages ago when over the summer, The Grass is Green, which is the craziest story. Louis was watching a race at Monmouth and had the TV on at Monmouth, saw this horse win, immediately called the John Stevens and bought the horse. And it's pretty funny, and looks like there's a real talent here. Chad Sweep, the early double here. Nick, let's start at the classic so we make sure that we get detail and work our way back. Work backwards through the late pick five.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's a classic we've talked about. You've obviously talked to many about. It's one, I think, that brings together one of the more interesting fields we've seen in the last 10 runnings or so, probably going back to 2017. Did you have this kind of depth at the top end with horses like Improbable, Tom's Detat, Tis the Law, Authentic? You know, these are all very decorated horses, Maximum Security, obviously. And so getting all of them in the gate together is something that we all desire on a yearly basis. And now we're finally seeing it. So it's a good thing in that respect. And, you know, the interesting thing about the betting in this race, and of course I'm kind of you know, pulling up the anchor with this whole thing at the end of it, and so I've gotten to listen to everybody. I've heard way too much, obviously, over the course of a few days between social media and, you know, everywhere else that you hear people's opinions. It feels like Tom's Detat is going to be nowhere near 6-1. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes Tom's Detat, and that would not ever be enough to get me off of him, because he's a horse who I have a great affinity for, and I don't, you know, I don't think that he's necessarily a bad bet at 7-2 or 4-1. Obviously, when we get to this race from a wagering perspective, you always handle it based on how things have gone, maybe what you're alive in. In terms of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, of course, I mean, I've cashed twice in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and have only hit the Classic once. So I can tell you that if I get alive, I'm going to be betting Tom's Detat. I'm going to be betting Big Exact is over Improbable and Tis the Law. I'll probably try a couple of tries to squeeze in Tacitus in the third spot. I don't think I'd ever have him above that, but I do think he's going to get the kind of ride that he needs to make that one run. Maximum Security is a fade for me. He could win. I've always believed he's a very quality horse. I think that the Awesome Again was kind of a tipping of the hand a little bit that he's going the wrong way. I know he's trained a little bit better, but that's just what I'm going to stand on, and so I'm going to concentrate on Tom's Detat over Tis the Law and Improbable.
Excellent. If there's a oddball horse that invades a super, who do you want? Who should people that are they're throwing out or ignoring that you want in the bottom of your rung?
I mean, if he's 20-1, like the morning line says, and I know he's much maligned by me and many other wise asses in the game, yeah. But Tacitus is a horse you want to use, yeah. Right? I mean, I don't think that running third or fourth is beyond him at all. And you know, at that kind of price, you've got to use him.
I think he and Higher Power are the fun inclusions and you know, they're, I suppose maybe their exotic number will be, you know, lower than their win number, but still, you know, the more multiples that are in, you know, I'm not a super player, but you know, the more of those horses that fill out, you know, the ticket, the better your return is going to be with, you know, with a set of favorites and you know, clear likely types on the top end of the ticket. The turf, turf was a subject of news this morning, Nick. Run backwards from here.
Yeah, obviously news that Tarnow is not going to be ridden by Christophe Soumillon. Tough for those that figured to back her, which included me. She's obviously a horse whose trainer Dermot Weld said is a little quirky and seems to have taken to Christophe Soumillon quite well. Hopefully they can have a, you know, an extended conversation to Soumillon and a new jockey Colin Keane about maybe some of the nuances to riding Tarnow. You know, the versatility she's shown in her last two, I think, was ultimately what put a lot of people over the edge, having won the Prix Vermeil over a firm turf course and then winning that Prix de l'Opera over just absolutely bottomless ground. And I think the mile and a half really is what suits her most. Where do you go now if you're looking for alternatives? I think there's reason to like Lord North. Can he make up the ground that he was behind Magical each of the last two times? I think you could attribute some of the poor performance last time to the turf. Now he's second off a layoff. I think you obviously want to take horses from John Gosden's yard very seriously. And I think you have to use Mogul, who was an impressive winner last time in the Grand Prix de Paris. Pierre-Charles Badeau is back on board. I think he's got the right kind of running style and that he'll be a little bit more forwardly placed, whereas Magical might find herself a little bit farther off of it. You know, I heard you discussing this yesterday, and I think it's something worth mentioning. Be very careful if you're casually dismissing Channelmaker, because Channelmaker's a horse that's always shown a tremendous amount of talent, and now that they've committed to a certain type of running style, he has become a completely different horse. He's become a much, much better horse. So I think the 5-1 morning line was a source of a lot of chuckles a couple of days ago, but this is a horse who, you know, if he pulls a Bucks Boy type of effort, I'm not going to be shocked, and I'm not going to allow it to beat me.
Well, and you bring that up, and we just touched on Tacitus. We're going to talk about the Distaff now, and Horologist is a filly that is – I think, is being respected, but not being appreciated as a real potential interloper on the top end. And she and Valiance are going to be my other two with Skydiver and Monomoy. But Bill Mott is Bill Mott, arguably, his barn is as strong as it's been, I think, in our collective memory right now.
Yeah, the depth certainly is incredible. You know, talking about these three, and then obviously Frank Schrockett and a few others on the card. Horologist, I think, is coming up often enough as the alternative to the top two. I think that there's a lot of appeal there. I would say the only other horse I would consider as an alternative to the top two is Ollie's Candy, and that's probably more so from a you know, backup or exacta trifecta type of standpoint, because Ollie's Candy clearly is not much of a winning type. But, I think, like everybody else, it sort of boils down to the top two, and I have a great amount of respect for the race that Horologist ran last time. It was a really tremendous ride from Junior Alvarado. I don't think she was aided in any way by it being around one turn. I don't think the second turn will cause her any kind of problem. She's got good tactical speed. I think she has the right kind of profile for Keeneland. So, yeah, plenty of reason to throw her in there. I think you'd want to use her probably as a B in the pick five if you plan on using the two principals as A's. And if you're of the opinion that Valiance has turned the corner, these kind of horses always sort of puzzle me in you know, the sense that you're talking about one of the greatest trainers of all time who pretty firmly believed that this was a turf horse, and actually she turned out to be a grade one caliber dirt horse. That won't catch up to her here unless these horses prove to be just a little bit too tough. So it looks like a very, you know, very exciting running of the race, and there are a couple, I think, of real options as that, you know, quote-unquote third horse beyond Swiss Skydiver and Monomoy Girl.
All right, keep backing it up.
Yeah, the Breeders' Cup Mile, I think, is a particularly tough running of it. I think I could sit with you and make a case for probably 8 or 10 of them. To describe them in best detail, I could start with Euros and then talk more about domestic horses. I like Kamiko best of the Euros. I also fear Siskin because I do think that Siskin is dangerous in the sense that he has a very quick turn of foot. I think those are the kind of Euros that generally do best in America. I think they are in search of firm turf. They're getting it. He probably needed his last start. Now he's second off a little bit of a layoff. Sad to see One Master come out only because she's been so talented, and I actually thought she had a kind of a placing chance at what would have been a big price. But I think that's really my take when it comes to the Europeans. I think when it comes to domestic horses, you know, one of the things about this turf course coming up firmer than it was supposed to is that with each passing day of sunshine, and we're going to get a sense of just how firm it is, even though it's listed good today, Uni's chances improve. And I think that's something that's important to note. I'm not going to go out of my way to bet on Uni, but I would say don't casually dismiss her because the First Lady showed that she had was in the process of turning things around. I'm hopeful that the pace is strong and that Factor This and Halliday mix it up in the opening stages. That way I can play long shots underneath like March to the Arch, who I think is going to be well beyond his 15-1 morning line. I fear that maybe he was helped by the one-turn miles at Woodbine, but he just ran two races in his last two starts that are much better than anything he's ever put forth, in my opinion. And I think these are the kind of horses on the up that you want to take in the Breeders' Cup. And then, of course, you have to use Ivar, who was an impressive winner of the local prep, and I think horses that generally have taken well to Keeneland in the past do very well regularly. As far as the sprint goes, I'm going to go too deep. If it's anybody but these two, I'll lose. I'm just using Diamond Oops and Yopan. I think that Yopan is going to more than likely go wire to wire. If he doesn't, I think he'll be able to sit outside of Empire of Gold potentially, and anybody else who wants to show speed down towards the inside of those two. I don't think Frank Schrockett is going to be sent on any kind of suicide mission. And I thought Diamond Oops' Phoenix win was outstanding. He had a very good trip that day, but this is a horse that, kind of an exercise in how forgiving you are as a handicapper, draw a line through everything but his dirt sprints. And you're talking about a horse that's been remarkably consistent and in some ways could actually arguably be the favorite. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm going to go there, and I don't think I personally am not going to use anybody in the Maltese beyond those two.
That's the pick five that works from the sprint through the classic. And how about a quick hit on the pick four tomorrow? Filly and Mare sprint, turf sprint, dirt mile, Filly and Mare turf. Got about, what do we got? We got 2 minutes.
It's only fitting that, of course, the guest who specialized the filibuster on your show was brought in on a quick take. So I'm a Bell's the One guy in the Philly and Mir sprint. I think the pace is going to be there for her. I'm going to use Serengeti Empress of the speed types. I'd much rather have her than Gamine. I think this is a great spot to bet against Gamine. So in terms of multis, I'm mainly going to be Serengeti and Bell's the One. I'll use a little bit of speech as a backup. Anybody besides that is going to surprise me. Obviously, Sally's Curlin is more of a placing chance, I think, from way off of it. The turf sprint is absolutely brutal. I think I could find myself using anywhere from 6 to 8 horses. I'll tell you who I'm going to give more consideration to, even from an intra-race perspective, is Big Run Ewer. And I think a lot of people have overlooked that speed can be very dangerous on this turf course, and this is not a turf sprint that's loaded with speed. I like the inside post because they pretty much only have one way to go, and if Just Might is ridden passively enough to allow Big Run Ewer to get a comfortable early lead, I think he can be very, very dangerous. I think based on that pace opinion, you have to use Leinster, you have to use Wet Your Whistle, both of whom can be somewhat within range. I think the turf course worked against Texas Wedge in his last start. I could see him running better. Might not quite be good enough to win, but obviously Peter Miller has done incredibly well in this race in the past. And you have to have Imprimis, who's not only run well locally, but comes off of a very impressive prep, in my opinion. The Dirt Mile is an outstanding running event. I think there are probably 2 to 3 main players, including Complexity and Nix Go. Canix Go, I guess is how it's pronounced. I'm going to use Owendale as well, who I thought was pressed into pace attending duties in his last 2 starts. That's not really ideal for him. I think he wants to be allowed to lay a little bit more off of it and make one run. I think he's going to get that kind of trip. Don't love the post position, but a horse with his style usually can overcome that type of draw. There's plenty of pace in here. There's also another horse that I think has been a little too casually dismissed as well, and that's War of Will, who Mark Cassie's done very, very well over the years with horses going turf to dirt. War of Will reportedly is training well. Now, this is a horse that you're going to get a really nice price on, who has run dirt races that unquestionably make him competitive and make him dangerous. So I'm gonna use War of Will as well, and I've actually been very surprised at how little chatter I've seen about him. Closing it out, I think the Euros hold the strongest hand in the Philly and Mare turf, with all due respect to Rushing Fall and Sister Charlie and Mean Mary. I'm going to primarily use Terrabellum, Cayenne Pepper, and Audaria. I'm also going to use Peaceful a little bit more as a backup, giving her an excuse for that poor run last time. Feels like the kind of race where you want to be looking for a little bit of an outsider, even though we're somewhat well represented. I just can't ignore how good the value is going to be on Terrabellum, Audaria, and Cayenne Pepper.
There it is. Yeah, and you left there. There's probably 45 to 75 seconds to spare.
You know, you need like a countdown clock for me, so that I need a website to look at so that I know. I don't think I left out any details I would have liked to, but I'd say as far as these days go, I'm a masochist in terms of how I play the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. I'm somebody that needs to hit a lot of races in order to be dangerous. I wish I had more of that killer instinct type of ability, like Tommy Massis and a lot of the guys that have been Garrett Skiba that have been very successful in live money tournaments. But the key to that is not allowing a race where you don't win to have too much of an effect on you. And I've definitely let that happen to myself in my own betting. And that's relevant whether you're playing in a contest or not. Understand that these are amongst the hardest races you're going to bet on all year. So definitely don't get too stuck on maybe not performing as well early on as you would have expected to. So there's a lot of reason to believe that you can take a loss and get ready to win the next race.
Well, exactly. And as I wrote in my Breeders' Cup invocation, as I always do, don't get frustrated. Save your best money and your biggest plays for the opinion you have the most confidence in. Best of luck. Nick, of course, thanks as well for the contribution. And Hammer did it as well today to the Breeders' Cup Betting Companion that we did. I'll resend out the link for it, and Nick will hash it all out tomorrow. Best of luck to you and everybody in the BCBC.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me. Great job with the coverage, as always. You're such a credit to the game.
Too kind. And I want to thank Casey, who's been fabulous all week, and everybody that cycled through, all the guests. Today, Marty McGee, Nicole Russo, Ed DeRosa, James Scully, Jay Pridman, Hammer and Jimmy Ventura, Steve Haskin, Dave Brennig, and Nick. Thanks to all of you for tying on and having an interest and being excited about what should be a spectacular Breeders' Cup. Best of luck. We will talk on Monday. We'll start recapping it. We'll celebrate the triumphs, and we'll probably kick a few cats. I want to thank Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup, of course, and Oaklawn, plus the Betmakers, Thorograph, and all the sponsors, Naira Betts. And really was a wonderful week. And the only thing that would make it better if you can be here, and you will be in 2 years. Talking to Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.